But if your superiors are willing to fire your ass and give me your position, I'm in. It's a done deal. Silence. Sorrento's face was a stoic mask. He probably had certain emotions, like anger and rage, filtered out on his facial recognition software. "Could you check with your bosses and let me know if they'll agree to that?" I asked. "Or are they monitoring us right now?" "I'm betting they are," I waved to the invisible cameras. "Hi, guys! What do you say?" There was a long silence, during which Sorrento simply glared at me. "Of course they're monitoring us," he said finally. "And they've just informed me that they're willing to agree to each of your demands." He didn't sound all that upset. "Really?" I said. "Great! When can I start? And, more importantly, when can you leave?" "Immediately," he said. "The company will prepare your contract and send it to your lawyer for approval. Then they, will fly you here to Columbus to sign the paperwork and close the deal." He stood. "That should conclude, actually," I held up a hand, cutting him off again. "I've spent the last few seconds thinking this over a bit more, and I'm going to have to pass on your offer. I think I'd rather find the egg on my own, thanks." I stood up. "You and the other sucksers can all go fuck a duck." Sorrento began to laugh, a long, hearty laugh that I found more than a little disturbing. "Oh, you're good. That was so good. You really had us going there, kid." When his laughter tapered off, he said, "That's the answer I was expecting. So now, let me give you our second proposal." "There's more?" I sat back down and put my feet up on his desk. "Okay, shoot. We'll wire $5 million directly to your Oasis account right now in exchange for a walkthrough up to the first gate. That's it. All you have to do is give us detailed step-by-step instructions on how to do what you've already done. We'll take it from there. You'll be free to continue searching for the egg on your own. And our transaction will remain a complete secret. No one ever need know of it." I admit, I actually considered it for a second. $5 million would set me up for life. And even if I helped the Sixers clear the first gate, there was no guarantee they'd be able to clear the other two. I still wasn't even sure if I would be able to do that. "Trust me, son," Sorrento said. "You should take this offer while you can." His paternal tone irked me to no end, and that helped to steel my resolve. I couldn't sell out to the Sixers. If I did, and they did somehow manage to win the contest, I'd be the one responsible. There was no way I'd be able to live with that. I just hoped that H, Artemis, and any other Gunters they approached felt the same way. "I'll pass," I said. I slid my feet off his desk and stood. "Thanks for your time." Sorrento looked at me sadly, then motioned for me to sit back down. "Actually, we're not quite done here. We have one final proposal for you, Parzival, and I saved the best for last. Can't you take a hint? You can't buy me, so piss off. Adios. Goodbye. Sit down, Wade." I froze. Had he just used my real name? "That's right," Sorrento barked. "We know who you are. Wade Owen Watts, born August 12th, 2024, both parents deceased. And we also know where you are. You reside with your aunt in a trailer park located at 700 Portland Avenue in Oklahoma City, Unit 56K to be exact. According to our surveillance team, you were last seen entering your aunt's trailer 3 days ago, and you haven't left since, which means you're still there right now." A vidfeed window opened directly behind him, displaying a live video image of the stacks where I lived. It was an aerial view, maybe being shot from a plane or a satellite. From this angle, they could only monitor the trailer's two main exits, so they hadn't seen me leave through the laundry room window each morning or return through it each night. They didn't know I was actually in my hideout right now. "There you are," Sorrento said. His pleasant, condescending tone had returned. You should really get out more, Wade. It's not healthy to spend all of your time indoors. The image magnified a few times, zooming in on my aunt's trailer. Then it switched over to thermal imaging mode, and I could see the glowing outlines of over a dozen people, children and adults, sitting inside. Nearly all of them were motionless, probably logged into the Oasis. I was too stunned to speak. How had they found me? It was supposed to be impossible for anyone to obtain your Oasis account information. And my address wasn't even in my Oasis account. You didn't have to provide it when you created your avatar, just your name and retinal pattern. So how had they found out where I lived? Somehow they must have gotten access to my school records. Your first instinct right now might be to log out and make a run for it, Sorrento said. I urge you not to make that mistake. Your trailer is currently wired with a large quantity of high explosives. He pulled something that looked like a remote control out of his pocket and held it up. And my finger is on the detonator. If you log out of this chat link session, you will die within a few seconds. Do you understand what I'm saying to you, Mr. Watts? I nodded slowly, trying desperately to get a grip on the situation. He was bluffing. He had to be bluffing. And even if he wasn't, he didn't know that I was actually half a mile away in my hideout. Sorrento assumed that one of the glowing thermal outlines on the display was me. If a bomb really did go off in my aunt's trailer, I'd be safe down here under all these junk cars, wouldn't I? Besides, they would never kill all those people just to get to me. How? That was all I could get out. How did we find out who you are and where you live? He grinned. Easy. You screwed up, kid. When you enrolled in the Oasis public school system, you gave them your name and address, so they could mail you your report cards, I suppose. He was right. My avatar's name, my real name, and my home address were all stored in my private student file, which only the principal could access. It was a stupid mistake, but I'd enrolled the year before the contest even began, before I became a Gunter. Before I learned to conceal my real-world identity. How did you find out I attend school online? I asked. I already knew the answer, but I needed to stall for time. There's been a rumor circulating on the Gunter message boards the past few days that you and your pal H both go to school on Ludus. When we heard that, we decided to contact a few OPS administrators and offer them a bribe. Do you know how little a school administrator makes a year, Wade? It's scandalous. One of your principals was kind enough to search the student database for the avatar named Parzival. And guess what? Another window appeared beside the live video feed of the stacks. It displayed my entire student profile. My full name, avatar name, student alias, Wade 3, date of birth, social security number, and home address. My school transcripts. It was all there, along with an old yearbook photo taken over 5 years ago, right before I'd transferred to school in the Oasis. We have your friend H's school records, too, but he was smart enough to give a fake name and address when he enrolled, so finding him will take a bit longer. He paused to let me reply, but I remained silent. My pulse was racing, and I had to keep reminding myself to breathe. So, that brings me to our final proposal. Sorrento rubbed his hands together excitedly, like a kid about to open a present. Tell us how to reach the first gate. Right now. Or we will kill you. Right now. You're bluffing, I heard myself say, but I didn't think he was. Not at all. No, Wade, I'm not. Think about it. With everything else that's going on in the world, do you think anyone will care about an explosion in some ghetto trash rat warren in Oklahoma City? They'll assume it was a drug lab accident, or maybe a domestic terrorist cell trying to build a homemade bomb. Either way, it will just mean there are a few hundred less human cockroaches out there collecting food vouchers and using up precious oxygen. No one will care, and the authorities won't even blink. He was right, and I knew it. I tried to stall for a few seconds so I could figure out what to do. "You'd kill me," I said, "to win a video game contest?" "Don't pretend to be naive, Wade," Sorrento said. "There are billions of dollars at stake here, along with control of one of the world's most profitable corporations and of the Oasis itself. This is much more than a video game contest. It always has been." He leaned forward. "But you can still come out a winner here, kid. If you help us, we'll still give you the $5 million. You can retire at age 18 and spend the rest of your days living like royalty. Or you can die in the next few seconds. It's your call. But ask yourself this question. If your mother were still alive, what would she want you to do?" That last question would really have pissed me off if I hadn't been so scared. "What's to stop you from killing me after I give you what you want?" I asked. "Regardless of what you may think, we don't want to have to kill anyone unless it's absolutely necessary. Besides, there are two more gates, right?" He shrugged. "We might need your help to figure those out, too. Personally, I doubt it. But my superiors feel differently. Regardless, you don't really have a choice at this point, do you?" He lowered his voice as if he were about to share a secret. "So, here's what's going to happen next. You're going to give me step-by-step instructions on how to obtain the copper key and clear the first gate. And you're going to stay logged into this chat link session while we verify everything you tell us. Log out before I say it's okay, and your whole world goes boom. Understand? Now, start talking." I considered giving them what they wanted. I really did. But I thought it through, and I couldn't come up with a single good reason why they would let me live, even if I helped them clear the first gate. The only move that made sense was to kill me and take me out of the running. They sure as hell weren't going to give me $5 million or leave me alive to tell the media how IOI had blackmailed me. Especially if there really was a remote-controlled bomb planted in my trailer to serve as evidence. No. The way I saw it, there were really only two possibilities. Either they were bluffing, or they were going to kill me, whether I helped them or not. I made my decision and summoned my courage. "Sorrento," I said, trying to hide the fear in my voice, "I want you and your bosses to know something. You're never going to find Halliday's egg. You know why? Because he was smarter than all of you put together. It doesn't matter how much money you have or who you try to blackmail. You're going to lose." I tapped my logout icon, and my avatar began to dematerialize in front of him. He didn't seem surprised. He just looked at me sadly and shook his head. "Stupid move, kid," he said, just before my visor went black. I sat there in the darkness of my hideout, wincing and waiting for the detonation. But a full minute passed and nothing happened. I slid my visor up and pulled off my gloves with shaking hands. As my eyes began to adjust to the darkness, I let out a tentative sigh of relief. It had been a bluff, after all. Sorrento had been playing an elaborate mind game with me, an effective one, too. As I was gulping down a bottle of water, I realized that I should log back in and warn H and Artemis. The Sixers would go after them next. I was pulling my gloves back on when I heard the explosion. I felt the shockwave a split second after I heard the detonation and instinctively dropped to the floor of my hideout with my arms wrapped over my head. In the distance, I could hear the sound of rending metal as several trailer stacks began to collapse, ripping free of their scaffolding and crashing against one another like massive dominoes. These horrific sounds continued for what seemed like a very long time. Then it was silent again. I eventually overcame my paralysis and opened the rear door of the van. In a nightmare-like daze, I made my way to the outskirts of the junk pile, and from there I could see a giant pillar of smoke and flames rising from the opposite end of the stacks. I followed the stream of people already running in that direction along the northern perimeter of the stacks. The stack containing my aunt's trailer had collapsed into a fiery, smoking ruin, along with all of the stacks adjacent to it. There was nothing there now but a massive pile of twisted, flaming metal. I kept my distance, but a large crowd of people had already gathered up ahead of me, standing as close to the blaze as they dared. No one bothered trying to enter the wreckage to look for survivors. It was obvious there weren't going to be any. An ancient propane tank attached to one of the crushed trailers detonated in a small explosion, causing the crowd to scatter and dive for cover. Several more tanks detonated in rapid succession. After that, the onlookers moved much farther back and kept their distance. The residents who lived in the nearby stacks knew that if the fire spread, they were in big trouble, so a lot of people were already scrambling to fight the blaze using garden hoses, buckets, empty big gulp cups, and whatever else they could find. Before long, the flames were contained and the fire began to die out. As I watched in silence, I could already hear the people around me murmuring, saying that it was probably another meth lab accident, or that some idiot must have been trying to build a homemade bomb, just as Sorrento had predicted. That thought snapped me out of my daze. What was I thinking? The Sixers had just tried to kill me. They probably still had agents lurking here in the stacks, checking to make sure I was dead, and like a total idiot, I was standing right out in the open. I faded away from the crowd and hurried back to my hideout, being careful not to run, constantly glancing over my shoulder to make sure I wasn't being followed. Once I was back inside the van, I slammed and locked the door, then curled into a quivering ball in the corner. I stayed like that for a long time. Eventually, the shock began to wear off, and the reality of what had just happened started to sink in. My Aunt Alice and her boyfriend, Rick, were dead, along with everyone who had lived in our trailer and in the trailers below and around it, including sweet old Mrs. Gilmore. And if I had been at home, I would be dead now too. I was jacked up on adrenaline, unsure of what to do next. Overcome by a paralyzing mixture of fear and rage, I thought about logging into the Oasis to call the police, but then considered how they would react when I told them my story. They'd think I was a raving nut job, and if I called the media, they'd react the same way. There was no way anyone would believe my story. Not unless I revealed that I was Parzival, and maybe not even then. I didn't have a shred of proof against Sorrento and the Sixers. All traces of the bomb they'd planted were probably melting into slag right now. Revealing my identity to the world so that I could accuse one of the world's most powerful corporations of blackmail and murder didn't seem like the smartest move. No one would believe me. I could barely believe it myself. IOI had actually tried to kill me, to prevent me from winning a video game contest. It was insane. I seemed to be safe in my hideout for the moment, but I knew I couldn't stay in the stacks much longer. When the Sixers found out I was still alive, they would come back here looking for me. I needed to get the hell out of Dodge, but I couldn't do that until I had some money, and my first endorsement checks wouldn't be deposited for another day or two. I would just have to lie low until then. But right now, I needed to talk to H, to warn him that he was next on the Sixers' hit list. I was also desperate to see a friendly face. Chapter 15. I grabbed my Oasis console and powered it on, then pulled on my visor and gloves. As I logged in, my avatar reappeared on Ludus, on the hilltop where I'd been sitting prior to my chat room session with Sorrento. The moment my audio kicked in, I heard the ear-splitting roar of engines coming from somewhere directly overhead. I stepped out from under the tree and looked up. I saw a squadron of Sixer gunships flying in formation, zooming south at low altitude, their sensors scanning the surface as they went. I was about to duck back under the tree out of sight when I remembered that all of Ludus was an OPVP zone. The Sixers couldn't harm me here. Even so, my nerves were still on edge. I continued to scan the sky and quickly spotted two more Sixer gunship squadrons off near the eastern horizon. A moment later, several more squadrons dropped in from orbit to the north and west. It looked like an alien invasion. An icon flashed on my display, informing me that I had a new text message from H. "Where the hell are you? Call me ASAFP. I tapped his name on my contact list, and he answered on the first ring. His avatar's face appeared in my vid feed window. He was wearing a grim expression. "Did you hear the news?" he asked. "What news?" "The Sixers are on Ludus. Thousands of them. More arriving every minute. They're searching the planet, looking for the tomb." "Yeah, I'm on Ludus right now. Sixer gunships everywhere." H scowled. "When I find Irok, I'm going to kill him. Slowly. Then, when he creates a new avatar, I'm going to hunt him down and kill him again. If that moron had kept his mouth shut, the Sixers never would have thought to look here." "Yeah, his forum posts were what tipped them off. Sorrento said so himself." "Sorrento? As in Nolan Sorrento?" I told him everything that had happened in the past few hours. "They blew up your house?" "Actually, it was a trailer," I said, "in a trailer park. They killed a lot of people here, H. It's probably already on the news feeds." I took a deep breath. "I'm freaking out. I'm scared." "I don't blame you," he said. "Thank God you weren't home when it happened." I nodded. "I almost never log in from home. Luckily, the Sixers didn't know that." "What about your family?" "It was my aunt's place. She's dead, I think. We weren't very close." This was a huge understatement, of course. My Aunt Alice had never shown me much kindness, but she still hadn't deserved to die. But most of the wrenching guilt I now felt had to do with Mrs. Gilmore and the knowledge that my actions had gotten her killed. She was one of the sweetest people I'd ever known. I realized that I was sobbing. I muted my audio so H wouldn't hear, then took several deep breaths until I got myself under control again. "I can't believe this," H growled. "Those evil pricks! They're gonna pay, Z. Count on it. We will make them pay for this." I couldn't see how, but I didn't argue. I knew he was just trying to make me feel better. "Where are you right now?" H asked. "Do you need help? Like, a place to stay or something? I can wire you some money if you need it." "No, I'm okay," I said. "But thanks, man. I really appreciate the offer." "De nada, amigo." "Listen, did the Sixers send you the same email they sent me?" "Yeah, thousands of them, but I decided it was best to ignore them." I frowned. I wish I'd been smart enough to do that. "Dude, you had no way of knowing they were going to try and kill you. Besides, they already had your home address. If you'd ignored their emails, they probably would have set off that bomb anyway." "Listen, H. Sorrento said that your school records contained a fake home address and that they don't know where to find you. But he might have been lying. You should leave home. Go somewhere safe, as soon as possible." "Don't worry about me, Z. I stay mobile. Those bastards will never find me." "If you say so," I replied, wondering what exactly he meant. "But I need to warn Artemis, too, and Dido and Shoto if I can reach them. The Sixers are probably doing everything they can to learn their identities, too." "That gives me an idea," he said. "We should invite all three of them to meet us in the basement later tonight. Say around midnight, a private chat room session, just the five of us." My mood brightened at the prospect of seeing Artemis again. "Do you think they'll all agree to come?" "Yeah, if we let them know their lives depend on it," he smirked. "And we're going to have the world's top five Gunters together in one chat room. Who's going to sit that out?" I sent Artemis a short message asking her to meet us in H's private chat room at midnight. She replied just a few minutes later, promising to be there. H told me he'd managed to reach Daito and Shoto, and they had both also agreed to attend. The meeting was set. I didn't feel like being alone, so I logged into the basement about an hour early. H was already there, surfing the news feeds on the ancient RCA television. Without saying a word, he got up and gave me a hug. Even though I couldn't actually feel it, I found it surprisingly comforting. Then we both sat down and watched the news coverage together while we waited for the others to arrive. Every channel was airing Oasis footage, showing the hordes of Sixer spacecraft and troops that were currently arriving on Lutus. It was easy for everyone to guess why they were there, and so now every Gunter in the simulation was also headed for Lutus. Transport terminals all over the planet were jammed with incoming avatars. "So much for keeping the tomb's location a secret," I said, shaking my head. "It was bound to leak out eventually," H said, shutting off the TV. "I just didn't think it would happen this fast." We both heard an entrance alert chime as Artemis materialized at the top of the staircase. She was wearing the same outfit she'd had on the night we met. She waved to me as she descended the steps. I waved back, then made introductions. "H, meet Artemis. Artemis, this is my best friend H." "Pleasure to meet you," Artemis said, extending her right hand. H shook it. "Likewise," he flashed his Cheshire grin. "Thanks for coming." "Are you kidding? How could I miss it? The very first meeting of the High Five."
"The High Five?" I said.
"Yeah," H said. "That's what they're calling us on all of the message boards now. We hold the top five high score slots on the scoreboard, so we're the High Five."
"Right," I said. "At least for the time being."
Artemis grinned at that, then turned and began to wander around the basement, admiring the 80s decor. "H, this is, by far, the coolest chat room I've ever seen."
"Thank you," he bowed his head. "Kind of you to say."
She stopped to browse through the shelf of role-playing game supplements. "You've recreated Moro's basement perfectly, every last detail. I want to live here."
"You've got a permanent spot on the guest list. Log in and hang out anytime."
"Really?" she said, clearly delighted. "Thank you, I will. You're the man, H."
"Yes," he said, smiling.
"It's true, I am." They really seemed to be hitting it off, and it was making me crazy jealous. I didn't want Artemis to like H, or vice versa. I wanted her all to myself. Daito and Shoto logged in a moment later, appearing simultaneously at the top of the basement staircase. Daito was the taller of the two and appeared to be in his late teens. Shoto was a foot shorter and looked much younger, maybe about 13. Both avatars looked Japanese, and they bore a striking resemblance to one another, like snapshots of the same young man taken 5 years apart. They wore matching suits of traditional samurai armor, and each had both a short wakizashi and a longer katana strapped to his belt.
"Greetings," the taller samurai said. "I am Daito, and this is my little brother, Shoto. Thank you for the invitation. We are honored to meet all three of you."
They bowed in unison. H and Artemis returned the bow, and I quickly followed suit. As we each introduced ourselves, Daito and Shoto bowed to us once again, and once again we returned the gesture. "All right," H said, once all the bowing had ended. "Let's get this party started. I'm sure you've all seen the news. The Sixers are swarming all over Lutus, thousands of them. They're conducting a systematic search of the entire surface of the planet. Even if they don't know exactly what they're looking for, it still won't be long before they find the entrance to the tomb."
"Actually," Artemis interrupted, "they already found it, over 30 minutes ago."
We all turned to look at her.
"That hasn't been reported on the news feeds yet," Daito said. "Are you sure?"
She nodded. "Afraid so. When I heard about the Sixers this morning, I decided to hide an uplink camera in some trees near the tomb entrance to keep an eye on the area." She opened a vidfeed window in the air in front of her and spun it around so the rest of us could see. It showed a wide shot of the flat-topped hill and the clearing around it, looking down from a spot in one of the trees high above. From this angle, it was easy to see that the large black stones on top of the hill were arranged to look like a human skull. We could also see that the entire area was crawling with Sixers, and more seemed to be arriving every second. But the most disturbing thing we saw on the vid feed was the large transparent dome of energy that now covered the entire hill.
"Son of a bitch," H said.
"Is that what I think it is?"
Artemis nodded.
"A force field.
The Sixers installed it just after the first of them arrived."
"So?"
"So from here on out," Daito said, "any Gunter who finds the tomb won't be able to get inside, not unless they can somehow get through that force field.
Actually, they've put up two force fields, Artemis said, a small field with a larger field over it. They lower them in sequence whenever they want to let more Sixers enter the tomb, like an airlock. She pointed to the window. Watch, they're doing it now. A squadron of Sixers marched down the loading ramp of a gunship parked nearby. They were all lugging equipment containers. As they approached the outer force field, it vanished, revealing a smaller domed field inside the first. As soon as the squadron reached the wall of the inner force field, the outer field reappeared. A second later, the inner force field was dropped, allowing the Sixers to enter the tomb. There was a long silence while we all contemplated this new development. I suppose it could be worse, H said, finally. If the tomb were in a PvP zone, those assholes would already have laser cannons and robot sentries mounted everywhere to vaporize anyone who approached the area. He was right. Since Ludus was a safe zone, the Sixers couldn't harm Gunters who approached the tomb. But there was nothing to stop them from erecting a force field to keep them out. So that was exactly what they'd done. The Sixers have obviously been planning for this moment for some time now, Artemis said, closing her vidfeed window. They won't be able to keep everyone out for very long, H said. When the clans find out about this, it'll be all-out war. There will be thousands of Gunters attacking that force field with everything they've got. RPGs, fireballs, cluster bombs, nukes. It's going to get ugly. They'll turn that forest into a wasteland. Yeah, but in the meantime, Sixer avatars will be farming the Copper Key and then filing their avatars through the first gate, one after another, in a freaking conga line. But how can they do this? Shoto asked, his young voice brimming with rage. He looked to his brother. It's not fair. They're not playing fair. They don't have to. There are no laws in the Oasis, little brother, Daito said. The Sixers can do whatever they please. They won't stop until someone stops them. The Sixers have no honor, Shoto said, scowling. You guys don't know the half of it, H said. That's why Parzival and I asked you all here. He turned to me. Z, you want to tell them what happened? I nodded and turned to the others. First, I told them about the email I'd received from IOI. They'd all received the same invitation, but had wisely ignored it. Then I related the details of my chat room session with Sorrento, doing my best not to leave anything out. Finally, I told them how our conversation had ended, with a bomb detonating at my home address. By the time I'd finished, their avatars all wore looks of stunned disbelief. Jesus, Artemis whispered. No joke? They tried to kill you? Yeah, they would have succeeded too if I'd been at home. I was just lucky. Now you all know how far the Sixers are willing to go to stop us from beating them to the egg, H said. If they're able to locate any one of us, we're dead meat. I nodded. So you should all take precautions to protect yourselves and your identities, I said, if you haven't already. They all nodded. There was another long silence. There's still one thing I don't understand, Artemis said a moment later. How did the Sixers know to look for the tomb on Ludus? Did someone tip them off? She glanced around at each of us, but there was no hint of accusation in her voice. They must have seen the rumors about Parzival and H that were posted on all of the Gunter message boards, Shoto said. That's how we knew to look there. Daito winced, then punched his little brother in the shoulder. Didn't I tell you to keep quiet, blabbermouth? He hissed. Shoto looked sheepish and clammed up. What rumors? Artemis asked. She looked at me. What's he talking about? I haven't had time to check the boards in a few days. Several posts were made by Gunters who claimed to know Parzival and H, saying they were both students on Ludus. He turned to H and me. My brother and I have spent the past 2 years searching for the Tomb of Horrors. We've scoured dozens of worlds looking for it. But we never thought to look on Ludus. Not until we heard that you attended school there. It never occurred to me that attending school on Ludus was something I needed to keep a secret, I said. So I didn't. Yeah, and it's lucky for us that you didn't, H said. He turned to the others. Parzival unintentionally tipped me off about the tomb's location, too. I never thought to look for it on Ludus either until his name appeared on the scoreboard. Daito nudged his younger brother, and they both faced me and bowed.
You were the first to find the tomb's hiding place, so we owe you our gratitude for leading us to it.
I returned their bow. Thanks, guys. But actually, Artemis here found it first, totally on her own, a month before I did.
Yeah, for all the good it did me, Artemis said. I couldn't defeat the Lich at Joust. I'd been at it for weeks when this punk showed up and did it on his first try.
She explained how we met, and how she finally managed to beat the king the following day, right after the server reset at midnight.
I have H here to thank for my jousting prowess, I said. We used to play all the time here in the basement. That's the only reason I beat the king in my first attempt.
Ditto, H said. He stretched out his hand, and we bumped fists.
Daito and Shoto both smiled. It was the same with us, Daito said. My brother and I have been playing joust against one another for years, because the game was mentioned in Anorak's almanac.
Great, Artemis said, throwing up her hands. Good for you guys. You were all prepared in advance. I'm so happy for you. Bravo.
She gave us all a sarcastic golf clap, which made everyone laugh.
Now, can we adjourn the Mutual Admiration Society and get back to the topic at hand?
Sure, H said, smiling.
What was the topic at hand?
The Sixers? Artemis offered.
Right, of course.
H rubbed the back of his neck while biting his lower lip, something he always did when he was trying to gather his thoughts.
You said they found the tomb less than an hour ago, right?
So any minute now, they'll reach the throne room and face off against the Lich. But what do you think happens when multiple avatars enter the burial chamber at the same time?
I turned to Daito and Shoto.
Your names appeared on the scoreboard on the same day, just a few minutes apart. So you entered the throne room together, didn't you?
Daito nodded.
Yes, he said. And when we stepped on the dais, two copies of the king appeared, one for each of us to play.
Great, Artemis said. So it might be possible for hundreds of Sixers to joust for the Copper Key at the same time, or even thousands.
Yeah, Shoto said. But to get the key, each Sixer has to beat the Lich at Joust, which we all know isn't easy.
The Sixers are using hacked immersion rigs, I said. Sorrento was boasting about it to me. They've got it set up so that different users can control the actions of every one of their avatars, so they can just have their best joust players take control of each Sixer avatar during the match against a Sararak, one after the other.
Cheating bastards, H repeated.
The Sixers have no honor, Daito said, shaking his head.
Yeah, Artemis said, rolling her eyes. We've established that.
It gets worse, I said. Every Sixer has a support team made up of Halliday scholars, video game experts, and cryptologists who are there to help them beat every challenge and solve every puzzle they encounter. Playing through the war game simulation will be a piece of cake for them. Someone will just feed them the dialogue.
Unbelievable, H muttered. How are we supposed to compete with that?
We can't, Artemis said. Once they have the copper key, they'll probably locate the first gate just as quickly as we all did. It won't take them very long to catch up with us. And once they have the riddle about the jade key, they'll have their eggheads working around the clock to decipher it. If they find the jade key's hiding place before we do, they'll barricade it too, I said. And then the five of us will be in the same boat everyone else is in now.
Artemis nodded. H kicked the coffee table in frustration.
This isn't even remotely fair, he said. The Sixers have a huge advantage over all of us. They've got an endless supply of money, weapons, vehicles, and avatars. There are thousands of them, all working together.
Right, I said. And each of us is on our own.
Well, except for you two, I nodded at Daito and Shoto.
But you know what I mean. They've got us outnumbered and outgunned, and that isn't going to change anytime soon.
What are you suggesting? Daito asked.
He suddenly sounded uneasy.
I'm not suggesting anything, I said. I'm just stating the facts as I see them.
Good, Daito replied,
because it sounded like you were about to propose some sort of alliance between the five of us.
H studied him carefully.
So? Would that be such a terrible idea?
Yes, it would, Daito said curtly. My brother and I hunt alone. We don't want or need your help.
Oh, really? H said. A second ago, you admitted needing Parzival's help to find the Tomb of Horrors.
Daito's eyes narrowed. We would have found it on our own, eventually.
Right, H said. It probably would have only taken you another 5 years.
Come on, H, I said, stepping between them. This isn't helping.
H and Daito glared at each other in silence, while Shoto stared up at his brother uncertainly.
Artemis just stood back and watched, looking somewhat amused.
We didn't come here to be insulted, Daito said finally. We're leaving.
Hold on, Daito, I said. Just wait a second, will you? Let's just talk this out. We shouldn't part as enemies. We're all on the same side here.
No, Daito said. We're not.
You're all strangers to us.
For all we know, any one of you could be a Sixer spy.
Artemis laughed out loud at that, then covered her mouth. Daito ignored her.
This is pointless, he said. Only one person can be the first to find the egg and win the prize, and that person will be either me or my brother.
And with that, Daito and Shoto both abruptly logged out.
That went well, Artemis said, once their avatars had vanished.
I nodded. Yeah, real smooth, H. Way to build bridges.
What did I do? He said defensively. Daito was being a complete asshole. Besides, it's not like we were asking him to team up anyway. I'm an avowed solo, and so are you, and Artemis here looks like the lone wolf type too.
Guilty as charged, she said, grinning. But even so, there is an argument to be made for forming an alliance against the Sixers.
Maybe, H said. But think about it. If you find the Jade Key before either of us do, are you going to be generous and tell us where it is?
Artemis smirked.
Of course not.
Me neither, H said, so there's no point in discussing an alliance.
Artemis shrugged.
Well, then it looks like the meeting is over. I should probably get going. She winked at me.
The clock is ticking, right, boys?
Tick-tock, I said.
Good luck, fellas. She gave us both a wave. See you around.
See ya.
We both answered in unison. I watched her avatar slowly disappear, then turned to find H smiling at me.
What are you grinning about, I asked. You've got a crush on her, don't you?
What? On Artemis? No. Don't deny it, Z. You were making googly eyes at her the whole time she was here.
He did his impression of this, clasping both hands to his chest and batting his eyelashes like a silent film star.
I recorded the whole chat session. Do you want me to play it back for you, so you can see how silly you looked?
Stop being a dick.
It's understandable, man, H said. That girl is super cute.
So, have you had any luck with the new riddle, I said, deliberately changing the subject. That quatrain about the Jade Key?
Quatrain?
A poem or stanza with four lines and an alternating rhyme scheme, I recited. It's called a quatrain.
H rolled his eyes. You're too much, man.
What? That's the proper term for it, asshead.
It's just a riddle, dude. And no, I haven't had any luck figuring it out yet.
Me neither, I said.
So we probably shouldn't be standing around jabbering at each other. Time to put our noses to the grindstone.
I concur, he said, but...
Just then, a stack of comic books on the other side of the room slid off the end table where they were piled and crashed to the floor, as if something had knocked them over. H and I both jumped, then exchanged confused looks.
What the hell was that? I said.
I don't know. H walked over and examined the scattered comics. Maybe a software glitch or something?
I've never seen a chat room glitch like that, I said, scanning the empty room.
Could someone else be in here? An invisible avatar eavesdropping on us?
H rolled his eyes. No way, Z. You're getting way too paranoid.
This is an encrypted private chat room. No one can enter without my permission. You know that.
Right, I said, still freaked out.
Relax, it was a glitch.
He rested a hand on my shoulder.
Listen, let me know if you change your mind about needing a loan or a place to crash, okay?
I'll be all right, I said. But thanks, amigo.
We bumped fists again, like the Wonder Twins activating their powers.
I'll catch you later.
Good luck, Z.
Same to you, H.
Chapter 16. A few hours later, the remaining slots on the scoreboard began to fill up, one after another, in rapid succession. Not with avatar names, but with IOI employee numbers.
Each would appear with a score of 5,000 points, which now appeared to be the fixed value for obtaining the copper key. Then the score would jump by another 100,000 points a few hours later, once that sixer had cleared the first gate. By the end of the day, the scoreboard looked like this. High scores. Number 1, Parzival, 110,000. Number 2, Artemis, 109,000. Number 3, H, 108,000. Number 4, Daito, 107,000. Number 5, Shoto, 106,000. Number 6, IOI, 655321, 105,000. Number 7, IOI, 643187, 105,000. Number 8, IOI, 621671, 105,000. Number 9, IOI, 678324, 105,000. Number 10, IOI, 637330, 105,000. I recognized the first Sixer employee number to appear because I'd seen it printed on Sorrento's uniform. He'd probably insisted that his avatar be the first to obtain the copper key and clear the gate, but I had a hard time believing he'd done it on his own. There was no way he was that good at Joust, or that he knew war games by heart. But I now knew that he didn't have to be. When he reached a challenge he couldn't handle, like winning at Joust, he could just hand control of his avatar off to one of his underlings. And during the War Games challenge, he'd probably just had someone feeding him all of the dialogue via his hacked immersion rig. Once the remaining empty slots were filled, the scoreboard began to grow in length, to display rankings beyond 10th place. Before long, 20 avatars were listed on the scoreboard, then 30. Over the next 24 hours, over 60 Sixer avatars cleared the first gate. Meanwhile, Ludus had become the most popular destination in the Oasis. Transport terminals all over the planet were spitting out a steady stream of Gunters who then swarmed across the globe, creating chaos and disrupting classes on every school campus. The Oasis Public School Board saw the writing on the wall, and the decision was quickly made to evacuate Ludus and relocate all of its schools to a new location. An identical copy of the planet, Ludus II, was created in the same sector, a short distance away from the original. All students were given a day off from school, while a backup copy of the planet's original source code was copied over to the new site, minus the Tomb of Horrors code Halliday had secretly added to it at some point. Classes resumed on Ludus II the following day, and Ludus was left for the Sixers and Gunters to fight over. News spread quickly that the Sixers were encamped around a small, flat-topped hill at the center of a remote forest. The tomb's exact location appeared on the message boards that evening, along with screenshots showing the force field the Sixers had erected to keep everyone else out. These screenshots also clearly showed the skull pattern of the stones on the hilltop. In a matter of hours, the connection to the Tomb of Horrors D&D module was posted to every single Gunter message board. Then, it hit the news feeds. All of the large Gunter clans immediately banded together to launch a full-scale assault on the Sixers' force field, trying everything they could think of to bring it down or circumvent it. The Sixers had installed teleportation disruptors, which prevented anyone from transporting inside the force field via technological means. They had also stationed a team of high-level wizards around the tomb. These magic users cast spells around the clock, keeping the entire area encased in a temporary null magic zone. This prevented the force fields from being bypassed by any magical means. The clans began to bombard the outer force field with rockets, missiles, nukes, and harsh language. They laid siege to the tomb all night, but the following morning, both force fields remained intact. In desperation, the clans decided to break out the heavy artillery. They pooled their resources and purchased two very expensive, very powerful antimatter bombs on eBay. They detonated both of them in sequence, just a few seconds apart. The first bomb took down the outer shield, and the second bomb finished the job. The moment the second force field went down, thousands of Gunters, all unharmed by the bomb blasts due to the no PvP zone, swarmed into the tomb and clogged the corridors of the dungeon below. Soon, thousands of Gunters and Sixers had crammed into the burial chamber, all ready to challenge the Lich King to a game of joust. Multiple copies of the King appeared, one for every avatar who set foot on the dais. 95% of the Gunters who challenged him lost and were then killed. But a few Gunters were successful, and at the bottom of the scoreboard, listed after the high five and the dozens of IOI employee numbers, new avatar names began to appear. Within a few days, the list of avatars on the scoreboard was over 100 names long. Now that the area was full of Gunters, it became impossible for the Sixers to put their force field back in operation. Gunters were mobbing them and destroying their ships and equipment on site. So the Sixers gave up on their barricade, but they continued to send avatars into the Tomb of Horrors to farm copies of the Copper Key. No one could do anything to stop them. The day after the explosion in the stacks, there was a brief story about it on one of the local news feeds. They showed a video clip of volunteers sifting through the wreckage for human remains. What they did find couldn't be identified. It seemed that the Sixers had also planted a large amount of drug manufacturing equipment and chemicals at the scene to make it look like a meth lab in one of the trailers had exploded. It worked like a charm. The cops didn't bother to investigate any further. The stacks were so dense around the pile of crushed and charred trailers that it was too dangerous to try to clear them out with one of the old construction cranes. They just left the wreckage where it was, to slowly rust into the earth. As soon as the first endorsement payment arrived on my account, I bought a one-way bus ticket to Columbus, Ohio, set to depart at 8 the following morning. I paid extra for a first-class seat, which came with a comfier chair and a high-bandwidth uplink jack. I planned to spend most of the long ride east logged into the Oasis. Once my trip was booked, I inventoried everything in my hideout and packed the items I wanted to take with me into an old rucksack. My school-issued Oasis console, visor, and gloves. My dog-eared printout of Anorak's Almanac. My Grail diary. Some clothes, my laptop. Everything else I left behind. When it got dark, I climbed out of the van, locked it, and hurled the keys off into the junk pile. Then I hoisted the rucksack and walked out of the stacks for the last time. I didn't look back. I kept to busy streets and managed to avoid getting mugged on the way to the bus terminal. A battered customer service kiosk stood just inside the door, and after a quick retinal scan, it spat out my ticket. I sat by the gate, reading my copy of the Almanac, until it was time to board the bus. It was a double-decker, with armor plating, bulletproof windows, and solar panels on the roof. A rolling fortress. I had a window seat, two rows behind the driver, who was encased in a bulletproof plexiglass box. A team of six heavily armed guards rode on the bus's upper deck, to protect the vehicle and its passengers in the event of a hijacking by road agents or scavengers, a distinct possibility once we ventured out into the lawless badlands that now existed outside of the safety of large cities. Every single seat on the bus was occupied. Most of the passengers put on their visors the moment they sat down. I left mine off for a while, though, long enough to watch the city of my birth recede from view on the road behind us as we rolled through the sea of wind turbines that surrounded it. The bus's electric motor had a top speed of about 40 miles an hour, but due to the deteriorating interstate highway system and the countless stops the bus had to make at charging stations along the way, it took several days for me to reach my destination. I spent nearly all of that time logged into the Oasis, preparing to start my new life. The first order of business was to create a new identity. This wasn't that difficult now that I had some money. In the Oasis, you could buy almost any kind of information if you knew where to look and who to ask, and if you didn't mind breaking the law. There were plenty of desperate and corrupt people working for the government, and for every major corporation. And these people often sold information on the Oasis black market. My new status as a world-famous gunter gave me all kinds of underworld credibility, which helped me get access to a highly exclusive, illegal data auction site known as the Leet Hacksaw's Wares House. And for a shockingly small amount of money, I was able to purchase a series of access procedures and passwords for the USCR, United States Citizen Registry, database. Using these, I was able to log into the database and access my existing citizen profile, which had been created when I enrolled for school. I deleted my fingerprints and retinal patterns, then replaced them with those of someone deceased, my father. Then I copied my own fingerprints and retinal patterns into a completely new identity profile that I'd created under the name Bryce Lynch. I made Bryce 22 years old and gave him a brand new social security number, an immaculate credit rating, and a bachelor's degree in computer science. When I wanted to become my old self again, all I had to do was delete the Lynch identity and copy my prints and retinal patterns back over to my original file. Once my new identity was set up, I began searching the Columbus classifieds for a suitable apartment, and found a relatively inexpensive room in an old high-rise hotel, a relic from the days when people physically traveled for business and pleasure. The rooms had all been converted into one-room efficiency apartments, and each unit had been modified to meet the very specific needs of a full-time gunter. It had everything I wanted: low rent, a high-end security system, and steady, reliable access to as much electricity as I could afford. Most important, it offered a direct fiber optic connection to the main Oasis server vault, which was located just a few miles away. This was the fastest and most secure type of internet connection available, and since it wasn't provided by IOI or one of its subsidiaries, I wouldn't have to be paranoid about them monitoring my connection or trying to trace my location. I would be safe. I spoke with a rental agent in a chat room, and he showed me around a virtual mock-up of my new digs. The place looked perfect. I rented the room under my new name and paid 6 months' rent up front. That kept the agent from asking any questions. Sometimes, during the late hours of the night, as the bus slowly hummed along the crumbling highway, I removed my visor and stared out the window. I'd never been outside of Oklahoma City before, and I was curious to see what the rest of the country looked like. But the view was perpetually bleak, and each decaying, overcrowded city we rolled through looked just like the last. Finally, after it felt like we'd been crawling along the highway for months, the Columbus skyline appeared on the horizon, glittering like Oz at the end of the yellow brick road. We arrived around sunset, and already there were more electric lights burning in the city than I'd ever seen at one time. I'd read that giant solar arrays were positioned throughout the city, along with two heliostat power plants on its outskirts. They drank in the sun's power all day, stored it, and fed it back out each night. As we pulled into the Columbus bus terminal, my Oasis connection cut out. As I pulled off my visor and filed off the bus with the other passengers, the reality of my situation finally began to hit home. I was now a fugitive, living under an assumed name. Powerful people were out looking for me, people who wanted me dead. As I stepped off the bus, I suddenly felt as though a heavy weight were resting on my chest. I was having a hard time breathing. Maybe I was having a panic attack. I forced myself to take deep breaths and tried to calm down. All I had to do was get to my new apartment, set up my rig, and log back into the Oasis. Then everything would be all right. I would be back in familiar surroundings. I would be safe. I hailed an auto cab and entered my new address on the touchscreen. The synthesized voice of the cab's computer told me the drive would take an estimated 32 minutes with the current traffic conditions. During the ride, I stared out the window at the dark city streets. I still felt lightheaded and anxious. I kept glancing at the meter to see how much farther we had to go. Finally, the cab pulled up in front of my new apartment building, a slate-gray monolith on the banks of the